So in Mitzvah Shem, we will have another shir that will incorporate the calendar and will incorporate a more major discussion of issues of relating to Shalom Bayis. Not necessarily is the shir that's being given here follow at all what's being done in New York. It's two separate things. So I know that everybody hopefully got a proper chassan class to begin with, and hopefully everybody learned all the halachas. However, it's important to chazer, as is important to chazer every chelik of Torah. In Lakewood, I heard on a tape from Rabbi Reisman that in Lakewood they used to have a rule that all the chassanim, after they had babies, they would have to go for chazar shir. So I don't know if that's still the rule, but at any rate, it's not a bad idea. And Saivi, the Chazal say that Hilchas Nida are considered one of the Ikri Halachas. If it's called Ikri Halacha, so certainly we should make sure that it's fresh in our minds. So even though most of what probably we'll cover, you know, if we even cover one Halacha that you might not have been clear about, or be Ma'ira Shaila, and now because of the Shaila, you ask your Rav, you clarify one issue, it's Kedai to spend the time just on that. The most important thing that I stress to Chassanin, to everybody, is you have to have a Rav, and you have to ask Shailas. Daniel could tell you, well, many people could tell you, I said, ask a Rav, ask a Rav, ask a Rav. I can't stress it enough times. You have to have a Rav, and you have to consult a Rav. And there's nothing embarrassing about talking to a Rav. Anything you ask a Rav, chances are 16 people asked him the same question beforehand. Anything you'll show to a Rav, he saw many times before. There's nothing embarrassing about asking or showing anything to a Rav, and you have to have a Rav, and you have to use it. Okay, anything that we're going to discuss tonight, some of it is, well, hachakis are negeya, the way you act for yourself. Obviously, also some things are negeya wife also, but, Marshall, I would like to start with hefsek taira, which are really things that are the women's domain. And even though we're going over the halachas, so maybe there's something that you might realize could be, maybe in your house, they're not so careful about. You have to be very careful how you approach your wife with a halacha that, for one reason or another, maybe you weren't keeping so carefully. So take note of it, and then be very careful how you approach it. Okay, to begin with, the issue of counting 5 days. So once a woman determines that she is actually a nida, then she begins to count 5 days. 5 days means the whatever part of the first day that she became a nida. Whether she got her period or she had a kesem that made her a nida, that part of the day, and then another 4 days. That's considered to be 5 days. The reason why a woman has to count 5 days before she begins shir nikiyim is because we're afraid that possibly she may have had tashmish, even if it's a chashash rachik. If it's possible that she may have had a tashmish before she became a nida, and then within the next 72 hours, she might be piloted some shichva zera, which will nullify a day of shiva nikiyim. In other words, if she had tashmish right before she got her period, and then let's say she would count 4 days afterwards, at which point she may, right in the very beginning of counting shiva nikiyim, she might expel from her body some of the zera. That zera nullifies that day of shiva nikiyim. So it's not considered to be naki, so it's not shiva nikiyim, so she only has 6 clean days. So in order to make sure that we don't have a problem of nullifying one day of shiva nikiyim with the zera, so we make her wait 5 days. Now these 5 days are really 4 days midaraisa and an extra day midarabonon. Because midaraisa, most of the chashashas are taken care of by waiting 4 days. There's the chashash rachik with ben hashmashas. You know, Ben Hashmashas on one side and Ben Hashmashas on the other side. So that the Chazal were Machmiran, and we keep that. There are times when, sometimes when one could keep only 4 days, and now it's really not Negeya, Mashal Chasin after the Chasana, so a Kala after Biri Shaino, so she only has to keep 4 days, since the 4 days are Midaraisa, and the Rabbana were not Machmiran, Dan Basulim, to keep 5 days. That's one such example to show the difference between a deraisa and a derabbanan. There are circumstances where a rav may say that it's okay to keep 4 days, but I'm not going into particulars. You have to discuss a rav. If there's some reason why you think that the rav might be mekel, you should discuss it with your rav. At the end of 5 days, or should I say at the end of day 5, because again it's not 5 complete days. So at the end of whatever's considered day 5, then she can attempt to do a hefsek if it's reasonable to expect that she's going to be clean. That means that if she's seeing blood that's pretty red, it's not, doesn't look like it's dried out, and she's still seeing a decent amount of brownish-reddish color, probably it's not worthwhile for her to do a hefsek. She might try one time and see if she gets clean, but if she doesn't really think that she should, that she's gonna have a clean bedikah, it doesn't really pay to try, because all she's gonna accomplish is to irritate herself. And we're gonna discuss a few things that we're gonna be try to be very careful to make sure that a woman doesn't irritate herself, because all that does is cause problems. She'll have an irritation in the cervix, so then she'll try to do bedikas, and then the bedikas will come out red, and she'll think that she's still bleeding, and really has nothing to do with bleeding. It has to do with an abrasion of the cervix. So if she doesn't think that she's going to get clean, don't try. But if she thinks, let's say for example, she got her period on Matzah Shabbos, so comes Thursday afternoon, it's almost 5 full days, it's very shy for her to be clean, then she should try to do a hefsek taira. So in order to do a hefsek taira, so Chazal very strongly advise that she clean the area well. There are those that say that it's preferable for her to shower or bathe. And you can be yotze this inyan if she takes a shower the night before even. She could be yotze the inyan of taking a shower, but then she should do again, either use a baby wipe or use a washcloth with some water to clean the area around Eisim Makim to make sure that it's free from any old blood. There is an eitzah for if she has time. It's not really negeya, someone that has kids jumping on top of her, but if she has the ability to take a bath before doing a hefsek taira, very often, sometimes all that's left is a little dried blood. And she's trying to do bedikas and it keeps coming out brown, brown, brown. And if you show it to a rav, the rav will say, I'm sorry, but it's no good. But it's really just old dried out blood. If she'll sit in the bath for a half hour beforehand, then that could just help the body to wash out the whole area. At which point, she's really not seeing any fresh blood, so she should be able to get a clean bedika. The only thing is that after taking a bath, she needs to wait at least 15 minutes. There are those, let's say a half hour, half down at the end, that's one of the shaylos you should ask your rav. Most places can say 15 minutes is sufficient, but she has to wait. The reason for that is, if you just washed out the area, let's say she took a bath, or for that matter, upon consultation with her doctor, used the douche, which means she squirted some water to clean out the area, so now it's clean. So now, let's quickly do a bedika, and now we'll make a hefsek taira to show that she has a chazaka, that she now established that she's not seeing blood. Of course she's clean. She just took water and washed out the area. That's not called proving that she's not seeing blood anymore. So that's not really a good bedika l'chadchila. In order to l'chadchila make a bedika, she should wait 15 minutes like this. In the event that she would have still been seeing blood, some blood would have dripped out and would have shown up on the bedika cloth. Since you see the bedika cloth is clean, so now you have a raya that mayon of sasam, that her flow is completely stopped, and she can begin counting the shiva nikiyim, which I should have said in the beginning, is the reason for making hefsek taira in the first place. It's a proof that she is no longer in the chazaka of seeing dam, but she rather is mayona sasam, and she's no longer seeing dam. Okay, she should lechatchila try to begin this process a half hour before shkia, in order to give herself a chance to wash around the area and to make one bedika, or maybe even another second or third bedika. Because even if the first bedika is no good, could be that there's just a little drop of brownish, dried up blood left over, and if she'll try a second or third time, then she might get a clean bedika. I should mention that she shouldn't really try more than 3 times, berech. I guess each person depends how sensitive she is, but if she'll try too many times, so it's very possible, like we mentioned before, it's very shy for her to irritate herself and to cause an abrasion of the cervix by doing too many bedikas and rubbing around too many times. So it's not a good idea. If she sees already after be'erach 3 times that she's not getting clean, the chances are she's not going to get clean, and all she's going to do is irritate herself, and she should just wait till the next day. Okay, she should, the hefsek taira should be done before shkia. If she did the hefsek mamish right after shkia, a few minutes after shkia, So you should take note of the time and you should consult your own. The different shitas regarding how many minutes after Shkia one could rely on Bid Eved to be considered to be before Bin Ashmoshes. And you need to consult your own.
Right, to be part of the Shivanakim, that is?
To be, in order to, the Hafsik, Shivanakim needs to be, let's explain. Shivanakim needs to be 7 complete days, not partial days. So the Hafsik Taira, which is going to establish that she's clean, has to happen before the 7 day starts. So it has to be done before Shkia. The only thing is, it could be that Bein HaShemoshes might start a minute or two, or maybe a drop more after Shkia. So there might be a drop of leeway for her to go after Shkia. If she forgot it, let's say she tried one or two times, and it wasn't good, and she wants to chaperon a third time, so go ahead, try. Take note of the time, and if the taka looks clean, and show it to Rav. So your Rav should paskin for you how many minutes after Shkia, b'deved, she could rely on that hefsik to start at that point the Shivan Akim.
But halachically, she's allowed to do, obviously before Shkia, she's allowed to do up to 15, that's not ridiculous if she wants. Is that correct? You're just saying that
yes.
Sensitivity.
As a Eitz HaTayva, I don't advise right. That she do more than the Erech 3.
And how if she's before Shkia can she start?
So, we're going to get to that. She, now that you mentioned it, excuse me. Lechatchila, the Hesek Taira should be done after Minchaktana, which is 2.5 Shoy Zmanios before Shkia.
I suppose Shoy's?
So, I don't know, nowadays I think that's Be'erech 2 hours. Two regular hours before Shkia, Be'erech is Minchaktana. So, about 2 hours. Nowadays, in the wintertime, when the day is about 10.5 hours long, so give or take a little bit, the shir from Milchiktana is two hours before Shkia, which is like Tarech 2:30. So from 2:30 on, she could lechatchila go ahead and make a hefsek taira. We'll get to other cases where it's possible to do differently. Okay, she should. Before she does a hefsek taira, she should check the cloth before using it. Every shir I've heard, even when I was a chassan, it's always the case where a woman used a bedikah cloth and she brought it to a rav, and the rav saw it was so unusual. There's like a little red in the middle, and nothing else is red, and it looks odd. And they checked it under a microscope, and it turned out to be a little red thread or a little red speck that was not dam. So she should check the bedikah cloth beforehand to make sure that it's clean before she uses it. Okay. Very often the area of the vaginal canal and the cervix can be very sensitive, especially due to pregnancy and childbirth, which causes hormonal changes. And even if normally she never ever had a problem in her life doing bedikas, all of a sudden she's starting to have problems doing bedikas. It's causing her to get irritated. So this is very common, and you should consult your rav about the possibility of using KY jelly, and you should consult your rav how to use it. Which way is considered to be lechatchila, that she should be able to get a bedikah without irritating herself. Because we are definitely not interested in a woman irritating herself, especially since if she'll get irritated, you'll have more shilas, you'll have to ask the Rav if it's possible for her to do maybe less bedikahs during Shiva Nikiyim. So you'll be machmer sometimes, and mitaych dechomer, you'll come with the kula. So right away, if you see that there's an issue, that she is sensitive to doing bedikahs, you should consult your Rav about the possibility of using KY jelly. Sometimes a woman has problems getting a clean bedikah. She just tries, and the next day she tries, and the next day she tries, and something seems to be wrong. She's not getting clean. So it's kedai to speak to a rav. It's possible that there may be cervical bleeding or a cervical abrasion that's causing her to see a red on the bedikah cloth, and the rav will advise you how to go about it. To go back to what Chaim asked before, in terms of timing, very often it happens that you know you're going to be in a situation where you're not going to. It's very shayach that you'll forget. You know, you're out of your routine. You might be going to a chasana. You might be headed into New York, and you're not sure exactly when you're going to be in the car. You might get stuck in traffic. It's an eitz hataiva. If you think you might be in such a situation, to do a bedika in the morning, especially if it's already day 6, you for sure won't have a problem, hopefully. And day 6, I mean from when she got her period. And she'll do a bedikah in the morning, and if that's clean, so then she should try. Let's say she gets to New York before Shkia. So go ahead, make another one, which is lechatchila before Shkia. That's the best time to do a hefsek. But like this, if she forgot, or she was stuck in traffic, it's okay. She made a bedikah in the morning, but David, we could rely on that bedikah, and you could start the Shiva Nikim from that night. Otherwise, you lose 24 hours. The only thing is that sometimes it happens that a woman can make a Hefsek Taira in the afternoon, directly after seeing fresh blood in the morning. And how is that Shaykh? Let's say she spotted in the middle of Shiva Nikim. So if she spotted in the middle of Shiva Nikim, she does not have to wait another 5 days. When we said you have to wait another 5 days, it means only once. One time she has to wait 5 days. Once she already counted 5 days, and we know we took care of the issue of Zera coming out, you don't have to do it again, because she's an Ida. For sure she didn't have Tashmish. Well, halacha, she's awesome. So you only have to count 5 days once. So if in the middle of Shiva Nikim, she saw a spot on a bdika cloth or on her underwear in such a way that makes her a nida, then she's going to have to make a new hafsik that afternoon. And in that circumstance, she must do her bdika close to shkia. She cannot rely on this etza to do bdika in the morning.
It's only if you found it. It's only if she saw it down that day or
that day. That day. If she saw it down the day before, let's say in the middle of Shiva Nikim, she saw it down the day before and it took her an extra day to clear up. So it's the next full day, no problem. She can make a deek in the morning if she thinks that she'll need that etzah. Again, the chatzilah is better to do before shkia. Okay, I should have mentioned this in the beginning, by the way, about the 5 days. So I hope everyone got that clear. 5 days means 5 days only one time, not two times.
Seven akim means seven. She has to pass 7 days of purity, but not 7 days has to pass her, right? That's what you do before. Why can't she check at 12 o'clock at night?
It's not seven complete days.
But she'll wait till 7 days, 12 o'clock at night, 7 days later.
Right. Oh, there's the amount of hours.
Yeah, it's the days, not by the hours, not 24 hours times seven.
If she sees in the middle of Shiva Nikim, she has to wait one day, or that night.
She has to get clean.
Yeah, but she, 5 hours later, she sees at 10 o'clock in the morning before Shkia, she could do a.
If she's clean, absolutely.
She has to wait one full day.
No. Shlomi only asked me what happens if it took an extra day for her to get clean. You know, let's say the blood it didn't clear up right away. There was some dried blood left over, and she can't get clean until the next day.
Right.
In that case, there's no fresh. It has to be fresh blood that morning. Dried out blood that she sees still seeing brown stains in the morning doesn't stop her from doing hefsek taira. She could sit, take a bath, get clean, and do bedika in the morning if she wants. If it's the next day. Again, if anything's not clear, please ask me. On Erev Shabbos, she should do the hefsek. She should do a hefsek before she lights candles. If she forgets, then it's not a problem. But the eved, it's not a problem. She could go ahead and do, as long as it's before shkia, she could go ahead and do a hefsek taira. In the summer, sometimes it happens that you want to take in Shabbos early. And people have this mistaken assumption that if the husband is going to shul and is going to say baruch hu, that the wife is mechuyav to take in Shabbos. It's not true. It's not true. The wife is not meshubit as long as there's another minion in town, as we always make sure in Waterbury that there's a second minion. So if somebody, you're not meshubit to the first minion, and she's totally within her rights to wait for the second, to wait for the second zman. The only thing is, this is an aside on Hilchos Shabbos, the only thing is that it's not nice in the same house, the husband comes home and the wife is still mopping the floor. So she should make sure that before she expects her husband to come home, that she should light the candles. So in this circumstance, if the husband goes very early to shul, she shouldn't really make a bedika very early, you know, before 5:30, and then she'll make a bedika, and Shabbos is not till 8 o'clock. So better she should wait till a little bit closer to shkia, and she could just take in Shabbos before she expects her husband to get home, and she'll make the bedika before that. Okay, that pretty much covers Hefsek Taira. Besides the inyan of Hefsek Taira is a chiyuv. There is no option. If she forgets doing Hefsek Taira, it's not considered to be Shiva Nikim. It's ma'akev. Chazal also advised that one use a meich dachuk, which means that she insert a soft material into Eisen Mokim. She should put it there right before Shkia and leave it there until Tseis. Definitely you don't have to leave it there more chomedic than you keep Shabbos, and if she finds it at even the slightest bit uncomfortable, 45 minutes is more than sufficient. sometimes it's more than just a little uncomfortable, it becomes very uncomfortable, and being that this is only a chumrah, you should right away call your Rav, especially if you see that this is a pattern, and she is not mechuyev to stay in bed and stay not moving, because every time she moves, she feels the bedikah cloth rubbing against her. She's not mechuyev to do that. Chances are the rav is going to say that she's parted from doing a moich bichlal. You should speak to your rav.
Is this like the hefsek tahara that it gets worse after pregnancy?
For sure. For sure. Any time that she'll be drier, and you know, because of hormones, she's going to have a harder time doing it. So yeah, it could be that she had no problem doing the moich tahara till now, and now all of a sudden she has a problem. Call her up. Could be that it'll be, you know, just for this month. The next month, you know, you'll ask a shayla again. When I said a soft material, so most people taka use a bedika cloth. You can even use the same bedika cloth if she checked and made a hefsik. So she should first pull it out and make sure that it's clean. And if she sees that it's perfectly clean, you can go ahead and use the same bedika cloth, which, by the way, is easier because it's not so dry. It's already lubricated with natural lubrication. And or possibly KY if that's what she used already, and it'll go in much easier. And then she should put it in, and then she'll pull a finger out and leave it there, like we said, until tzeis. But besides using that, there is also a possibility of using a tampon, because it's not, you don't have to use a bdika cloth. But so the upside of that is it's a little bit softer, but the downside of that is that it's a little bit longer, so you may bump into blood that you didn't bump into by the hefsek, which theoretically she might be able to get around. And now she uses a tampon, it'll cause her problems, and it might be harder for her to pull out if it's drier. So whatever, I'm just mentioning that when I say moich, it doesn't have to be a bdika cloth, could be a tampon. She should use whatever she finds is easier for her, whatever she learned in calculus.
The 45 minutes is what you hold tesis.
Yeah.
No, it's not 45 minutes, it's whatever I hold tesis.
Whatever you hold tesis. And not more chalim than Shabbos, absolutely. But even if you hold, let's say you hold 72, but she sees that she's having a problem, so okay, so let's say she can do it for 45 minutes, so matayv manayim, let her do it for 45 minutes. If even that is uncomfortable, you should call her up. Okay, if you, this is very important, if she sees fresh blood that day, like in our example of Shiva Nikiyim, she's in the middle of Shiva Nikiyim, let's say day two, and she sees fresh blood that morning. For some reason, she had another breakthrough spotting, and she was able to get clean pretty quickly. She took a bath, and she got clean. And she's going to want to do a hefsek, as we mentioned, before Shkia, not in the morning, but before Shkia. And that circumstance, she must do a moich. It no longer is a chumrah. In this circumstance, it becomes an ikar hadin, and she must do a moich. So even though I said most times it's a chumrah, there is a circumstance where a moich becomes an ikar hadin. And if she finds it to be very uncomfortable, call your rav. Maybe he'll have an etza to make it easier.
But the time is not ma'akev.
The
amount of time.
No, not more ma'akev. Again, the time stays the same. Not more ma'akev than Shabbos, certainly. Okay. After she finishes with Hasek Taira and the Moich Dachok, so at that point Shiva Nikiyim begins. She should put on white underwear. And in terms of a white sheet or a nightgown, a girl usually follows her mother's minig. And you're not mechuyev to just, even if it's your minig, you're not mechuyev to try to be machmer on her. It's the same thing as like lighting candles, or how many times she's supposed to dunk in the mikvah. All these things are totally in her minhagim and have nothing to do with our minhagim. Lechatchila, during Shiva Nikiyim, she should try to do two bedikas every single day. Now these bedikas are specifically by day, not at night at all. She does one in the morning when she wakes up, and one before Shkia. L'chadchilo. If she's irritated easily, you should call your Rav, again, right away. We have no interest in her getting irritated. Again, it's going to be Yatzah Schar B'Hafseda. We want to try as much as possible that she does not become irritated. It's just going to cause problems with the Dikas. And in that case, you should call your Rav. There's a good chance, I mean, there's different Dargis. It could be that I'll say to do one time a day. Sometimes I'll say to do just day 1 and 7. I mean, whatever, speak to your Rav and see what he advises to do in a case where she's irritated. Yes?
Does she have to wake up earlier than usual to do a bedika?
No, when she wakes up.
And that's 12 o'clock?
Doesn't matter. You want her to wake up earlier?
There's no tape.
If you forget bedikas, then b'de'evet, it's okay. As long as she remembered to do one on day 1 and 1 on day 7. Parenthetically, there are certain circumstances, very extreme circumstances, where a Rav might be makel to do only day 1 or only day 7, But that's like a very extreme circumstance. If she has a wound that's causing her very big problems to do bedikas, a rav might be mekel to do day one and do either day one or seven. But again, only upon consulting with a rav could you be mekel like that. That's a big cooler. Okay. Anybody have any shaylos on what we did so far? Okay. We'll move on. If you do think of things, especially again in the next section we're going to talk about is hafakas. There's space to write on the bottom, all around. Just please scribble down a shiloh, and as soon as we stop, then we'll go through the shilohs. What is the definition of hafakas? So people mistakenly think that because we find in the Torah there's a concept of a nida becoming tameh, that tameh is something you stay away from. So a nida, you got to stay away from a nida. So we have all these hafakas. The truth is that nowadays the inyan of Tumas Nida is really not so relevant, because we're not noyig anyway, we're not noyig with Shumas, we're not noyig to eat Chulin v'Tahira, it's completely not Negeya. The issue of Harchakas, what the definition of Harchaka means, staying away, means things that keep a person away from hugging and kissing. That's the definition. And I stress staying away from hugging and kissing, because the point of Harchakas is not to distance a husband and wife from each other, but to distance the husband or the wife from coming to a situation which will lead to hugging and kissing. I cannot stress enough the importance, while she's in Ida, of doing various things to make her realize that you still love her, that this relationship is not a relationship which is based only on physical, but she is your best friend, she's a person you want to spend time with, you want to talk to her, you want to spend time with her, You want to have a relationship where you're going to bring home flowers to show her that you care about her when you're shopping. Maybe you're dafka, even if you should do this when she's not needed too. But when you know that she likes dafka, a certain cereal, a silly thing even like that. But you dafka went when you were shopping and you went ahead and bought that cereal. So you showed her that I was thinking about you. When I was shopping, I also think about you because I care about you because we have a relationship. And this relationship is not totally in being able to touch. So that's I can't stress that Indian enough. And it's very hard, especially there's a lot of hachakas, and very often a wife could chas v'shalom come to feel like she's a mitzayra. She comes close to you, and you know she can't come too close to you, and you can't touch, and all the things that you can't do, and she starts to feel pushed away. So we have to dafka do extra things, even more sometimes than when she's not in need, that we do extra things to show her that she's not a mitzvah, that we want to be with her, we want to talk with her, we want to spend time with her. The only thing is, Chazal said that there's harchagas, there's yisurim, Chazal knew the nature of people better than we do, and they felt that these things are things which bring to chibuk v'nishuk, which fashteitzach leads to other things, and therefore they're aser. So they're aser. So we're going to keep the halacha, but not that you don't want to be with her. Okay. And just to stress the importance of harchagas, so the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, brings a story, Tanit Ve'Eliyahu, that one time there was a Talmud, who was a tremendous Talmud Chacham, he learned a lot, he was Meshamash Tamid Chacham a lot, no, he did a lot of Chesed, whatever he did, he was a special person. And then he died, B'chatzi Yomov. He died early, he died when he was young. And his wife was very upset. And she took his tefillin, that's a Lashon HaGemara, she took his tefillin and she went around to the Bate Knesiyos and the Bate Medrashis, complaining. She said, Zu Torah v'zu Schar. It says in the Torah, Ki hu chayecha v'ayrech yamecha. It says v'ayrech yamecha. It says you're going to live long. So how come my husband died? B'chatzi yamov, what's the pshat? And nobody could answer. Till Eliyahu Navi met her on the street one time. And he said, my daughter, when you're in Nida, how did you act with her? And she said, no, he stayed away from me. And what about during Shiva Nikiyim? So she said, he ate with me, and he drank with me, and he slept with me in the same bed, even though Rashi says they had separate bedclothes, but they shared a bed. And he didn't even think about anything else. It never occurred to him to do a davar as. So Eliyahu HaNavi said a very strong lashon. He said, Baruch HaMakom Shaharve. Baruch Hashem, he got killed. That's a pretty strong lashon. Shalei Nasa Panam HaTayr. He didn't keep the Tayr. The Torah says, "Ve'al isha benidas tumas aleisikrav." You're not supposed to come close to an idol. Certain things that are hachakas are deraisa, and certain things that are hachakas are midrabbanan. The way the rabbanan defined loisikrav, you're not allowed to come close to an idol because it might come lidei chibut v'nisha can be up. And he didn't keep the Torah, so he deserved to die. It's a very strong statement. That means again, all he did was he ate with her, and he drank with her without the various things that are necessary while you're eating, and he shared the same mattress with her in separate clothing, and still at the same time Eliyahu Hanavi said Baruch HaMakom Shaharga, so that you see from there the chashivas of hachokas. And even if we might not be able to comprehend why a particular hachaka might lead to chibuk v'nishuk, it's not up to us to define what makes something nehi l'dei chibuk v'nishuk. Chazal defined the parameters of what's considered hachakas and what's not necessary, and we're mechuyev to listen to the rabbanu. Again, I reiterate, at the same time that we're mechuyev to keep to the letter of the law, what Chazal said a person is mechuyev to stay away from. But again, we have to make sure that she does not feel pushed away and feel like a mitzvah. Okay, so to begin with the particular halachas of harchakis, so the first topic is physical contact, whether directly or indirectly. So feshteitzach, as we mentioned, hugging and kissing obviously is aser, including holding hands in an intimate way, which is also even midaraisa according to Moshitas, which is directly what the pasuk means, Ve'alisha v'nidas tumasa le'sikra. As I state in Rambam. Chazal added in, not only is this kind of physical contact also, but even touching, like it's a lashon shulchan aruch, afilu be'etzpaktana, even to touch with your little finger, is still considered to be also. And not only can't you touch her, you can't even touch her clothing. So, you have to try to be careful to distance yourself if you're sitting, or if you're walking by, in such a way that you will not bump into her clothing. I should mention, and I say this for all the hachakas, very often, especially in apartments, I remember when I was in Eretz Yisrael, it's very hard. There's like a counter on one side and a counter on the other side, and there's a narrow aisle in between, and your wife is busy cooking, and she asks you to go get something from the cabinet, and you walk by, and it's difficult. And the chances are that you're going to brush up against her, at least once during Shiva Nikim. There's a good chance. So, in order that she should not feel like a mitzvah, you don't have to jump like she's, you know, like she's a leper and you jump to the other side of the kitchen. You just simply say, oh, I'm sorry. And you go weiter. And the next time you walk by, you try to leave enough space that you could get through without bumping into her. But it's almost impossible to keep all the hachakas, you know, this is one of them, but even all of them, to keep all the hachakas without making a mistake at least once during Shiva Nikim is just about impossible. So,
just don't help your wife.
You should not even spend time with her, then you won't have a problem, just stay away. So it will happen. It will happen that you will make mistakes. So the important thing is just say, oh, I'm sorry. You know, right to gang, and you move on and you just try to be more careful. And that's it. Okay. Not only is directly touching also, but even in indirect contact, such as passing or throwing, is also also.
Darbana.
So, I'm sorry?
Darbana.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Most of the things are going to be darbana. I'm not going to differentiate anymore. So passing, even if it's a very long object, you have a 10-foot long pole and you want to pass it directly to her, it's also. That's considered to be, it's indirect, but at the same time, the machlok is why it's also. One shot is because it causes a husband to place his mind on his wife. And therefore, that's aser. So passing directly to her is aser, and throwing to her is also aser.
That throwing directly, or throwing next to
her? Throwing, even if you throw on the side of her and she reaches over and catches it, it's still aser. There are those that are matir. If you throw it up and then it comes back down, so it's not the same kayach. If you find this to be a useful kula for you, consult your rav.
You want to pass the baby.
There is a very important kula. Let's say you want to take something. There's a difference between passing and throwing. There's another is the most sheet is aser for you to directly take something and put it in her pocketbook. Something that she's holding. If she's holding the pocketbook. If she's holding the pocketbook, you're not allowed to directly put it in her pocketbook. According to most sheetas. However, even though sheetas that aser that, there's no iser to throw it into her pocketbook or drop it into her pocketbook. So sometimes you have a problem with the keys. If you're walking, you know, you come to the door and you're holding some, you know, whatever. You're holding something, you can't jiggle the door. So for whatever reason, she needs the keys. All you have to do, if she craps this Eitza, all she has to do is just open a pocketbook, you just drop it in, and it's completely mutter. You don't have to like throw it on the floor, she has to bend down, it becomes a whole issue. So this is just a simple Eitza that's completely mutter to solve the problem of passing keys.
Is a pocketbook, a woman's pocketbook, considered her clothing? Like, you know, sometimes she holds a pocketbook, brushing against that's considered clothing unless she's not wearing it, or that?
or anything?
I don't know.
Can you say there's any
no.
particles floating if she...
No, she's wearing
that
something.
That she's not wearing. Say if, let's say on your bed or something.
Yes,
or
you can move her clothes. She's not wearing...
About, so are you allowed to take
any clothes?
Heat out of the pocketbook? Her pocket while she's
no.
holding
no.
it?
That's no, yeah, that's considered directly. That's like, that's like from, that's considered to be like handing something. As opposed to the dropping is considered to be thrown.
But if her pocketbook is clear, I will throw it to you. Okay.
Yeah, you can use the force.
Okay. Okay, and all these things, by the way, a shinui does not help. Doing something in a funky way doesn't make it mutter just because you did it in the, just because you did it with a shinui. Besides passing or throwing, you're also not allowed to putting something on her lap, for example, a baby, which makes things much more complicated. You may not take a baby and put the baby directly on her lap. You have to put the baby on something else, on the side of her, on the arm of the chair, or I don't know, she could shift over and make a little space on the chair and put the baby next to her, and then she'll hold on to the baby, and then you'll let go, and that way you'll be able to pass the baby one to the other. Very often, by the way, a point of contention is that the husbands don't try to do things in a way which is smooth so that other people should not realize that she's an Ida. Even though we don't really care very much if, so she's an Ida. So you're right, no, twice, you know, 2 weeks that she's an Ida, 2 weeks she's not, who cares, everyone knows, right? No, it makes a very big difference to them. They really find it to be an invasion of privacy if people know that she is an Ida. And as much as possible, we should try to do things in a suave way. So if you think about it beforehand, if you know you're going to be in a situation, you're eating out at somebody's house, and you show up, you have a baby, you have either a baby seat or a carriage, it's not so difficult. It just takes a little bit of thought beforehand. So you, let's say you're holding the baby, and you know, the baby starts to get jiggly, and you're not interested anymore. You want to give the baby to your wife, so you could eat your soup, let's say. So just, you know, put the baby down in the carriage, you know, make believe like the baby's going to stay there, and 2 seconds later, the baby wants to be held, right? So the baby's going to start crying. And say, oh, could you please pick her up? I have to eat my soup. And nobody knows anything. It looks like you just put the baby down and the baby started crying and nobody knows. As opposed to, like, let's just make it really obvious. Take the baby, plunk the baby on the table, and then she should take the baby from the table. Just try to do it in a way which is, you know, as smooth as possible. And sometimes that requires a little bit of thought. You have to think of aces.
What if it
says that we should also offer to help? It's a pet peeve of mine. I can see a lady struggling up the stairs with a stroller. Don't wait to figure out if her husband's helping. Just run and help her.
Mask him.
Worst comes to worst, he'll kick you out of it. You know? You can never feel like a bigger turtle than that, you know?
I agree with you. You're right. 100%.
Even when she's not in Ida, you should help her.
Bang. No, you don't have to fake it out. You don't have to fake it out when she's not in Ida.
But then people know.
How doesn't matter.
Protect the privacy.
That's logic. I'm sure it's
just if somebody's actually
thinking that hard,
if somebody actually pays attention enough to figure it out, the chances are probably that he just got married. And therefore he's being icing at this by himself. That's first of all. And second of all, there's no heter to break these things because of tznius. If somebody will chap, it makes no difference. It's not a heter. She might be the most uncomfortable, but l'maisa, it's awesome.
I don't want to die.
And even the hashkafa behind it really is that so somebody will chap that you're keeping halacha. No. It's the same thing even if a lady walks back to the mikvah. Let's say a lady walks back to the mikvah Friday. I just set it aside. I'm going off topic for a second. And she's wearing a snood, and somebody chaps. What's a lady doing walking the streets, you know, Friday night at whatever time, and she's not wearing a shetel, and so she's not going anywhere? Good, if that person, Taka, figured it out, because he's busy thinking, nope, so that's his problem. He's busy trying to figure out what a lady's doing. He shouldn't be thinking about it. That's not her problem. She has to go take care of what she has to go take care of, and she comes home, and that's it. It's not a violation of tznius that somebody else is going to chap that she's keeping it up. And it's also not a hetzer to break the hafakas either. There are circumstances where if there's a difference of opinion between the paiskim and there's a kula de gashita and she's very uncomfortable, it could be that could be you can rely on the kula de gashita because she's very uncomfortable. But other than that, if the halacha is or your rav said that it's aser. She's not comfortable. Sorry, try to come up with a different etza that nobody should. If you're putting babies on a lap. So also, even if let's say you're in your own house and you want to just make things simple, you plunk the baby down on the table. You're not mechuyev to let go of the baby before she holds the baby. Please keep the baby safe. You hold on to the baby. She should hold on to the baby's legs. You'll hold on to the top. When she's holding on, then you let go, and then she'll take the baby. You know, well, we have no interest in children falling off tables. So please be careful. There's no isser, and the same thing holds true with anything. There's no isser with holding, with touching an object together. You know, she's holding onto the table and you're holding onto the table, there's no problem. What there is a problem with is moving furniture, for example. So over there, where you're both moving it, and one person could feel the movement of the other person, in that case it's usser. You try to do spring cleaning when she's not in either. So why else you be doing a lot of schlepping?
Why can't you pass it in? Why can't you pass it in?
Because you're not allowed to hand something directly from one person to the next.
That's what that is, though.
No, it's on the table. I take the baby, put the baby down on the table. Okay, now it's on the table. I'm just holding on to the baby. She can hold the baby now by the baby's legs. So we're both holding on to an object together, but we're not moving the object together. So then, and then you let go, and then she'll pick up the baby. So the baby stays safe, and you don't have to, like, come up with some eight, so, you know, go over to the carriage and put the baby down, and she'll pick the baby up. Right? If it's simple, if you find it simpler to just chuck the baby in the swing, if you have one of those swings that are easy to get into and out of, so fine, chuck the baby in the swing, she'll pick up the baby. But you could do that also. Sometimes, you're just a young couple with one child, and you're sitting and eating, and the baby's next to you. And you want to get up, and you're holding the baby, and you just want to pass the baby. It's just simple. You just put the baby down, and she'll take the baby, and she'll hold on, and you let go, and she'll hold the baby.
Not a problem.
No. There's no problem with holding on to something at the same time, as long as you don't move the object.
Are you allowed to push a swing?
No. No, you may not push, you may not, besides moving furniture, you may not push a stroller together. If you're in ShopRite and the wagon's very heavy, you have to push it by yourself. She can't help you. And
why can't you pass the baby and just like hold it, and then she holds it, and then you
let go? Does that mean?
Because that's passing. That's passing. What you just did is pass the baby.
Well, what is that?
You're talking about the same time. She holds it.
Then you pass it.
So you pass it to her. That's the same thing.
You can both touch the table.
It's called passing with two hands. That's what it's called.
Okay. Let's move on. In terms of if you have a child who's a little bit older, very often it happens that the child decides that you're not good enough, and the child wants to go to mommy. Sometimes it happens vice versa, and the kid is like, you know, leaning out of the parent's arms to go to the other parent. So, I don't know if I got that right. So, in that case, many players can hold that it's mutter, but if you find that this is a common occurrence, you should ask your rav beforehand. I'm not a pesik. I can't be makel for you. There are many pesikim that are makel. Okay. As we mentioned before, in terms of a child in the other person's arms, is really not about touching, but kissing a child in the spouse's arms is also usher. Okay. There are situations where you can feel your wife's movement, like for example, sitting on a couch. Especially if the couch has only one cushion, or sometimes the couch is a little old and shaky. And in that circumstance, you may not sit on a couch at the same time. If you have a couch that's a little bit either firmer or more solid, and you sit on that's a little bit longer, and you sit on two ends, in that case, if you cannot feel the other one's movement, then it's mutter. However, if you can, it is usr. Now, the perfect example where you're not allowed to sit in such a way when you feel the other person's movements is the swings that go on the porch, like Yitzchok has on his front porch. That is usher for a husband and wife to sit on when she's in either. Okay, in terms of sitting in a car or in a taxi, sometimes, very often, a car has two separate seats, you know, two bucket seats, and it's not really an issue. If you're in an old fashioned car, right? You have which I had when I was first married. And you have one big long seat in the front, and it's shayach again also, and the seat is not so firm that you could feel the other person's movement. Then it really depends. Many places can say that if you're traveling in the car for a purpose, like you're going to a chasna, or you're going to a dvar mitzvah, then you're not just going out for a pleasure ride. In that case, you're not mechuyev to put anything between them. This is something you should consult with your rav, especially if you're going on a pleasure trip. You just want to go out to take a drive on a vacation. In that case, if you have one seat, or if you end up taking a taxi to go somewhere, and you end up in the back seat, and it's a stickle soft, and you can feel the other person's movements, you should put something in between you. you know, at least something of substance, like a decent sized pocketbook, or you're going away, take your hat box, I don't know, whatever it is, there's something in between you.
Does that help on a couch? Put someone between you?
So in terms of a couch, if there is somebody sitting in between you, so then it's mutter. I don't think that putting something in between you is enough. Okay, even someone sitting in between them, there are those that are machmer, by the way. So I'm leaving that out. Okay, in terms of, we spoke about traveling somewhere for pleasure. In that case, even if you're not sitting on the same bench, let's say you take a carriage ride in Central Park, and you have one of these carriages, and you're on one side and she's on the other side, even so, it's still usser. You're just taking a spazier and go through Central Park with a horse. You shouldn't be doing that when she's in Nido. Another example of that would be a rowboat. If you just want to go out, go rowing, and she's in Nido.
If you can feel your movement, should
we? Usually in one of these. Yeah. Besides that, there could be another issue involved in taking a carriage, or it might be a romantic outing, which might possibly be also.
Yeah. Hey, you said here you're not on the same bench. I took that to mean that even if you can't feel a movement.
Sitting, I'm sorry?
You said even if not on the same bench. So I took that to mean that you can't feel our movements. So in these cases, the carriage ride or rowboats, even if you can't feel each other's movements.
I'm a robot, I guess you can always feel the other person's movements.
For the wave, maybe.
I'll tell you the truth, this is very, very complicated in because machlokes. There is a separate halacha which is about taking a teal, the genus of padesim, going out for a drive, in the gardens. And it's not clear whether that's an extension of the previous halacha that we just learned, or if it's a new halacha. So I'm gonna. If you happen to expect yourself to be in such a circumstance, then consult your rav beforehand.
So should you consult the rav before I take a car trip in my life?
No, didn't say that. Well, if you expect to be in the back seat of taxi, you can take a taxi, and you expect to be in the back seat, you should find out whether or not, or you could just be machmer, but you should ask your rav if you're mechuyev to put something in between you.
I'm talking about the traveling for pleasure business. You're making two separate things or the same thing?
It's really, it's two separate things, because we're more machmer by traveling for pleasure. I don't know how you would have that. Yeah, most people, there are,
traveling for pleasure,
most poskim are makel in a, if no. You're going somewhere in a car, most poskim, most poskim are makel. But if you're going out to take something like a carriage ride, where specifically it's not meant as a teal, to go out, to enjoy Central Park, that's something that I would be machmer. If you're taking if your wife is an Ida, you should also probably stay away from taking a private walk. Let's say you want to go out to Beer Mountain and take your own private walk on a private path. That's something you should stay away from. That's also considered, that's nichla, even though you're not driving, but it's a subcategory of the halacha of going out to the gardens, and if it's private, you should stay away from it. So many places you go, there's plenty of places to go with our people. I mean, even hiking you go with our people, as long as you stay on the major paths. The next category is beds. A husband may not lie on his wife's bed even when she's not there. And sitting on a wife's bed is machlekes. So lemaisa, one should definitely be machmer. Most places can come out that if it's in her presence and you're sitting, you should definitely be machmer. And which happens very often when your wife gives birth and you're in the hospital room and she's up and she's with the baby, and when she gets up to do something, you're tired in the chair. In Waterbury it's not such a problem, but in Eretz Yisrael they have these narrow, they give you this stuff, four people in a room, and you have this like little 2x4 to stand in, and it was a problem. I couldn't sit down on my wife's bed, which has to happen in such a circumstance. There's only one bed there and you want to sit down somewhere, and if your wife is in the room, you should definitely be machmer not to sit on her bed. If she's not in the room and you want to sit on her bed, then you should ask a shayla. Okay, for the wife, she cannot lie on his bed in his presence. So dafka both things. She's not allowed to. The only thing that's also is for her to lie on his bed, only if he's in the room. But if he's not there, it's mutter, and sitting on his bed is definitely mutter.
Even if he's out.
Yes, sitting on his bed even in front of his mother for her. That's clear. That's clear. There's no machlokes on that. If you have a couch where sometimes your wife takes a nap and sometimes you take a nap, that's not considered, it's not her bed, it's nobody's bed. It happens sometimes that you're a guest and, you know, you slept in one bed and your wife slept in the other bed, and then she, for some, either, you know, one bed is lumpy and you want the other bed, right? No, I mean, you want to be nice and you want to give your wife the bed that's not lumpy, or sometimes she chafs that she slept in the bed that's not next to the wall and she finds it more comfortable to sleep in it. To sleep on the bed that's next to the wall, you know, maybe she has a baby to nurse and she's afraid the baby's going to fall off and she's just more comfortable with the bed next to the wall, and she didn't chaf, and the first night, you know, you slept on the bed already, so theoretically it's her bed. You should consult your Rav. I mean, I saw in writing one Rav that asks it, but when I spoke to my Rav, Rav Hillel David was Mekel, he said when you're a guest, there's no bed which is yours, they could kick you out of the room and put you in a different room. If you want to be Yitzel Choladeus and stop picking beds up and moving it around, that's fine. But you're not in your house. I don't know if that's such a good idea.
Why solve the lumpy problem?
Right. If it's lumpy, it doesn't solve the problem. That's true. So if you think this might be an issue, this is one of the things I have down. I think I wrote it down at the end. I didn't add it to the shaylus that one should ask a Rav. Because this is very shaykh to happen. It's very shaykh. I mean, you know, you'll...
Yeah, you wrote it number 7.
Okay.
Like if you go into like your in-laws or your parents and you have like your own room there,
you have
like designated beds,
but now
she wants to switch.
You have designated. Each time is every. If you're going as a guest, I think each time is different. Especially if you're guests. I mean, unless, I mean, don't make up beforehand that it's no, this is my bed and this is your bed.
What if at home you share? Let's
say it is. If you get married.
You could change. You could change. Let's say even in your own house, but you have to change before she's legal. You could decide. You could decide. You know, let's say, I don't know, till now, okay, till tonight, you know, her bed was on the left and your bed is on the right, so whatever, it doesn't matter. You say, you know what, I don't like it, then she doesn't care, then you switch. You could switch, but then when she'll be an easy, you can't change back again. Whatever you make up, no, this is the way it's going to be. So that's the way it is. This is her bed, this is your bed. It's not carved in stone. Another issue of beds is that. you may not prepare the beds if the other spouse is present. This applies whether the husband is preparing for his wife or the wife is preparing for the husband. And what does it mean to prepare the beds? It means you smooth out the sheet, you know, sometimes the especially if you use quilt covers, so the blanket gets all lumpy inside and you want to straighten it out. That's considered to be an act of maybe preparing the beds for going to sleep. It's an act of love. Which a wife does for a husband, or a husband could sometimes do for a wife, and that's also to do if the other person is in the room. Let's say the other person is out of the room. Let's say for example, if you're a little taller than your wife, and she, you know, it's easier for you to fix out the blanket, so she should go out of the room and shake out the blanket, and then you could put it on the bed. She knows you're doing it. It doesn't matter. She knows. It's just also to do it in front of her. Besides that, when I say preparing beds, this only means what we just discussed of like smoothing out the sheet and fixing the blankets. But changing the linen is, I hate to say it, but is quote unquote a maid's job. You know, sometimes you have to do it, if you're not zeichet to have a maid, then you have to change the linen. But it's the etzem, it's not an act of love, change the linen. It's a pain in the neck. And therefore it's not usher for one spouse to do. You can change the linen and the other person's there.
And making the bed is the same.
No. I didn't say that.
But that's a maid's job to make the beds.
No. Preparing the beds for going to sleep is an act of love. You know, you fluff it up and you turn it down and you make it all ready and make it all inviting to come to sleep. That's something that'll cause a person to think about other things. And that's awesome. You can hear a difference. You can hear a difference. There's a big difference. In terms of the beds being separated, I just want to clarify. Me'ikr ha'din. Okay, well, let's start with this. Me'ikar HaDin, the beds may not be touching. That's the Ikar HaDin. They may not be touching. Doesn't matter if it's separate mattresses. If the mattresses are touching, it's awesome. So what if you want to move it away 2 inches, or an inch even? As long as it's separate, Me'ikar HaDin, it's mutter. However, many poskim require that the beds be further apart. For there are different levels. Some poskim say they should be apart as much that the two blankets shouldn't touch each other. Some say that they should be apart enough that you shouldn't be able to reach over and touch the other person. which is more or less the same. There's a third shita, which really is the same thing, pretty much as an amma, which is, you know, between 18 and 24 inches. It's the same thing. An amma is your arms stretched. There's basically two basic shitas, and you should consult your rav as to how to go about it lechatchila. The reason I even mention the kula d'gashita is sometimes it happens that you end up in a situation where there's no room. There's no room. You're in. I don't know. Somebody end up staying in a tiny room. You're a guest somewhere, and there's just no room. There's a bookcase over here and a radiator over here, and they stuffed two beds in between. They pulled out the high riser and they stuffed you in, and you can't move it away more than 4 inches. So if you're stuck in such a situation, the ma'aseh the ikra din is that it's separated and it's mutter. Pashtezek, if you're able to do more, I mean, upon consulting your rav, I think that one should be machmer a little bit more, consult your rav as to which shita to follow. Okay. Those are the issues of bits. So, in terms of serving, so halachas, I try to clarify it a little bit, is you're not allowed to pour, the halachas of serving apply a wife to husband, a husband to wife. You may not pour a drink for your spouse if the cup is directly in front of her, or she cannot do it directly in front of you. That's considered to be like serving if you pour it and the cup is right there. A simple etzah to do is to take the cup and take it away, hold it in your hand, then you can pour a drink from her. And then when you put it back, what you could do is one of two things. Either one way to solve the problem of serving is you could use your left hand, make a shinui, put it down with your left hand, assuming you're a righty. If you're a lefty, put it down with your right hand. Or you could just put it on the side a little bit in such a way in which she has to pull it towards herself. So therefore, that's not cool that you served her. You put it on the table, and then she went ahead and served herself. So if you want to be nice and pour your wife a drink, it's not a big deal. You could do it. Take the cup, pour, and then just, you know, either put it down on the side or put it down with a shina. Okay, the same thing is true even if it's I said you can't pour a drink directly. It's also, let's say there's a full plate of food. Even if you're eating at somebody else's house, and let's say your wife carries the food in from the kitchen, she cannot put it directly in front of you, and the same thing vice versa. You have to either put it down with your left hand with a shina, or you have to put it on the side a little bit. And this shina, by the way, I saw one sefer remark, and I think it makes sense to me. This that you put down with the left hand has to be that your right hand is empty. But let's say she walks in from the kitchen holding two plates of food, and she puts down, now she's holding two, she puts down her left hand in front of you, you don't see a shina. Of course she put down with her left hand, because she's holding something in her right hand. It only becomes a shina if her right hand is empty. Just an interesting point. Okay, the last issue of eating is that a husband may, this is an issue specifically for the husband, the husband may not send a cup of wine for his wife, even al yidei shliach. And this might happen sometimes, let's say, by Sheva Brachas, and it's again the Chasam Kal themselves, or even sometimes, you know, let's say your wife likes to get from the Kaisha Brach, and she happens to be a neither. So you get hold of the cup from the Chasam Kal, you take a drink, you know, assuming people don't mind sharing germs, and you take a drink, and then you want to send that cup to your wife. So you pass it to your mother, and you ask your mother to send it down to your wife. That's awesome. You may not send a cup to your wife. Now, what do we do with Kiddush? I mean, I assume the Ohel already has Mahalach, but I'll just discuss the different options. There's three basic options that solve the problem. Either you could pour off onto another cup, you make Kiddush, you pour off wine into another cup, you drink from the Kiddush cup, and then she could go ahead and pour herself, and if there's guests, pour for everybody else. Or you could pour into, if you have guests, you could pour into many cups, and then she could choose a cup. There are those that are machmer on the first date, but I've seen many people make them even like this. There's no one cup that's miyuchet for her. You pour into six cups, and you have another four people on her, and she chooses any cup she wants. There's no cup that's miyuchet for her. So that's not cool that you miyachet a cup of wine for her. And that's mutter. Or, let's say you're by yourself, then either you could do the first date, or you could just make it, just put it down, and then she could go ahead and pick up the cup on her own and take a drink or pour into her own cup, whatever she's doing. That's the simplest way. I just a note, if you're gonna be naive, the first way, it's sometimes the simplest because you can just always do that. It doesn't matter if you're eating by yourself, it doesn't matter if you're eating with company. You just, when you make a dish, you pour it off into a cup, and then your wife takes for herself, and you always do that. And your kids will never notice the difference, and company will never notice the difference. That's what you always do. It's a simple way to solve the problem of shiluach kais. Just to quickly cover some of the, I'm not going to do every single nekuda, some of the other major things that we missed. The other isurim are that you may not talk in an intimate way, in such a way that might lead to a desire to come to touch. To say, and there's a big difference in how you talk. You're allowed to say a plain and simple, "I love you." However, to get all mushy about it and to talk in a mushy way is usur. So, I think it's a great idea. I think a husband should say, "I love you," or should find other ways to tell his wife that he cares about her. And we spoke about it before. Bring home flowers or other small little things. It doesn't have to be big things that let her know that you care about her. It doesn't have to be, expensive $50, $100 presents that let her know that you love her. The simple things, you're going shopping, you remember to take out the garbage the first time she asks you, you don't have to wait for the fifth time. Sometimes a little simple things let her know that you love her. It doesn't have to be big, huge presents. But to go further than that and to talk in an intimate way, I mean, even though she won't feel pushed away from you, but that's already going too far, and that will lead to other things that is usur. Even games which might lead to a palace reish, to a lightheadedness which might lead to a closeness which will come to touching, is also usur. I cannot give exact guidelines. I mean, it depends on the person. For some people, going bowling is just a thing to do. For some people, going bowling is a whole outing and they feel all great together, and that might be a problem. For most people, I would say playing checkers, chess, Scrabble is probably mutter. I guess if some people get all into it and have a great time, it becomes a whole party, I guess it's us. I think for most people, a game like Pictionary is probably, at least when I used to play as a bacher, it became a whole galechta, jokes and things, and it became a whole thing, and probably for most people it's us. If you could, again, each person is different. You have to use your common sense. If you could play a game that's not going to bring to anything else, it's mutter.
How do you play with someone else? So it's like your wife and playing, let's say, two
couples. Well, I don't advocate Pictionary games with couples either, because I don't think that couples should be having a grand old party together. I don't think that someone should be making a joke to the other person's wife and so on and so forth, but that's beyond the scope of this shir right now.
It's double.
Fashteitz of Twister is awesome, by the way. It's worse.
What's Twister?
Oh, yeah, well,
how's
it? It's true.
What couples do?
How about
what about just
Roger? How about guess who?
I don't know. I know that, again, you have to know. It's up to use your common sense. Use your common sense.
Okay.
Perfume that she normally wears to arouse you is usur. However, and if you're looking for maybe something to buy for Hanukkah, I'll find something not too expensive. Even a Bath and Body spritz, might suffice even, or a perfume that she doesn't normally wear. Very often, they don't feel clean. Even they took a shower in the morning, comes the end of the day, and they just don't feel so clean. They want to freshen up, take a spritz of one of these Bath and Body Works things, or even a perfume that she doesn't normally wear to, during the evening when you're going to sleep. So that's completely mutta. She's really just using it just so she should smell nice. She's not doing it to arouse you, and that's not a problem. So just something that you may not have covered. Parts of a woman's body that are normally covered, it's usur to stare at. And I say to stare at because the lashon of Shulchan Aruch is usur of hestaklus. Let's say she's changing her shirt for a second, and you notice before you had a chance to turn around, you saw her, there's no usur. You should turn around because you can't stare at her. But there's no usur stam seeing for a second. While she's nursing, it's advisable that she, it would be nice if she would cover herself and you wouldn't have a problem, but if she is exposed, you may not look at her, again, for more than half a second. And I guess if you say it in the right way, most probably she won't have a problem with covering herself. Again, as I said before, you have to be very careful when you try to get your wife to do something. You better ask in the right way, or you're just going to get pie in your face. So be very careful how you ask. I have at the end just a number of shaylas. I just want to put in, I'll say it just very quickly, just a shaylus, so how long to wait between a bith and hefsik? There's a machlekes. Most people say 15 minutes, some people say half hour. In terms of using KY and a bifakut, if she finds that she's sensitive, you should ask a rav. Again, a child jumping from one parent to the other, so there are many places in Baramati, but there are those that ask her, and just ask a rav, then you'll know what to do.
What's the problem? Child jumping.
As piercing. Is that considered piercing or not?
You're not touching your hand.
No, I don't mean jumping. I'm saying, the kid leans out of your arms.
About a 4-year-old.
No, it happens by a 1-year-old.
Oh, you
Number four, I should put in, I really should have taken out number four, but I have it down, so, no, don't cross it out. But I just, it says, can you take a bath on day one of Shiva Nikim before doing a bdika? It means there are certain cases where she has trouble getting clean. It could be the Rav is Chayish, there might be a wound inside, or there's an abrasion. Sometimes it's an Eitz HaTayva if she takes a bath. Besides, we mentioned taking a bath before doing a Hefzik. The next morning, sometimes she might have an Eitz, it could be an Eitz, so she'll take a bath, and she'll clean out the area, and then afterwards she'll do a Hefzik. She'll have an easier time getting clean. You should consult your Rav if you think that you might need this Eitz. Okay, I put something, I just wrote down, you should talk to your Rav about putting something in between you if you're in the back seat of the car. Sitting on her bed, again we mentioned it's machlokes, you should ask your Rav. Switching beds when you're a guest is machlokes. Again, I said her pillow says it's mutter. I saw in the art scroll right before it says it's usser. So ask your Rav. I think that it's something that, especially if you have a baby, that might, you know, you might space out. And you know, well, if you think about it, I guess you choose the right bed, but you might not realize and you might want to change beds. It's kedai to ask once you have a list. Talk to your Rav. What's the preferred distance between beds, and if you're allowed to make the beds in the morning, if you're only doing it to look neat, even though you know that later on you're going to use the beds for going to sleep, let's say you're in the room, your wife wants to shake out the quilts, it's true that you're going to use it for a night, but really she's doing it to make it neat. I'm not passing any, you should ask her up. It's pretty, because if you get up at the same time, it's pretty shy.